Welcome to a Bow Valley Christian Church podcast. We're about helping people find and follow Jesus. In this episode, you are listening to Andrew Kobe share his message titled, The Healing of Blind Bart, from the series titled, These Three Remain. This message was broadcasted live August 13th, 2023.
Bow Valley family, my name is Jeremiah, and I'm going to be reading from Mark 10, verse 46 to 52. They came to Jericho, as he and his disciples and a large crowd were leaving Jericho. Bartimaeus, son of Timaeus, a blind beggar, was sitting by the roadside. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout out and say, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. Many sternly ordered him to be quiet, but he cried out even more loudly, Son of David, have mercy on me. Jesus stood still and said, Call him here. And they called the blind man, saying to him, Take heart, get up, he is calling you. So throwing off his cloak, he sprang up and came to Jesus. Then Jesus said to him, What do you want me to do for you? The blind man said to him, My teacher, let me see again. Jesus said to him, Go, your faith has made you well. Immediately he regained his sight and followed him on the way.
Thanks, Jeremiah. Man, what a great service, hey? I feel like I don't even need to be up here with all that's happened already, but I am, so. As I said before, my name is Andrew Kobe. I'm the Youth and Young Adults Coordinator here. And there was a time that I hated movies. Don't walk out yet, just stick with me for a second. I hated movies. I didn't like them. I thought they were a waste of time. Why would I spend 2 to 3 hours of my life watching something happen on a screen? I mean, it's not even real. I could be out playing sports, hanging out with my friends, or just getting some actual good, productive work in. Movies made no sense. They just didn't. Recently, though, I think I've started coming around. I had the opportunity to, this past winter, to take a class. And the class was called Theology and Pop Culture. And essentially what this class was is we would watch a movie, we would listen to a podcast or an album of music, or we would read a book that is part of the culture, well-known, stuff like Dune, or different movies and albums. And we'd have a discussion about them in our class. Basically, the class was, we got to watch a movie as homework and then discuss it for an hour. And that was the class. Some of you are wondering where this class was when you were in school. It's pretty sweet, I'm not gonna lie. Anyway, I started off this class watching the movies. And my attitude was along the lines of, well, I could be writing a paper right now, but at least I'm watching a movie. But over the course of the class, I felt myself getting more and more into the material. I was loving the discussions, talking about Dune and different albums that I had never listened to before. And even more surprisingly, I was loving the movies. I was engaged by them. I was thinking about them. You see, I had missed that in movies, they're not just something that's there for you to watch, but it's something for you to participate in. That it's a story in which you can read yourself into. It's a story that, when told the right way, if the movie is done well enough, it can provide valuable insight into the world around us, into the culture that surrounds us. It can grab us, make us ask questions, and it can teach us things. It's interesting to note that the Gospel of Mark was originally a story. Maybe this is why it's my favorite gospel out of the four. It was a narrative written to the early Christians. It's a first century movie about the life of Jesus, a movie directed and written by God that has been handed down to us today. Why do I share all this with you? What's the point? Well, I bring this to mind because this morning we're going to look at Mark as a story, as a narrative. We're going to look at the whole thing. We're going to look at the big picture of Mark. And then by doing that, we can help look at a micro story, at the story of Bartimaeus in the gospel. And so I hope that you'll allow yourself to be captivated by the scripture, to be captivated by the story, to ask questions, and that hopefully you might even learn a thing or two. So that's the game plan. First, I'll set up this story with a couple pieces of relevant information. We'll take a deeper look at the story of Bartimaeus in his context. And then finally, we'll look at some ways that might be relevant, that this story might be relevant to us today in our culture. And I promised Evan that we would be out in time for brunch. So hopefully that all goes according to plan. The first half of this story of Mark focuses on one thing. It's about Jesus' identity. Jesus' identity as the Messiah and the Son of God. We read in Mark 1:1 that this will be a story about Jesus, who is the Messiah and the Son of God. It's important to pause here and note that most of us today, or maybe not most of us, but at least I, just glanced right past this verse. It's the very first verse of the book of Mark. And it says, the beginning of the good news about Jesus, the Messiah, the Son of God. I think it's important to pause here and note, just because, well, we've already read Matthew. Matthew's come before this. We know that Jesus is the Messiah, right? We know that he's the Savior, that he died on the cross. But the first century context didn't know that. That they read this and they thought, well, that's peculiar. Who is this guy who's reading this letter to me saying that he knows personally the Son of God? Put yourself in the listener's shoes just for a second. If you heard the words, I know the Son of God, he's the Messiah, would you believe them? If someone came up to you on the street and said, I know the Son of God, would you like to meet him? You'd probably think, you're crazy, please get away from me. And so, in light of this, Mark, the author, knows this. And he uses the next 8 chapters of his book to solidify Jesus' identity. These chapters are filled with stories of Jesus healing the sick, casting out demons, and even raising people from the dead. And all the while, this story is going on, full of miracles and miraculous events and things that just don't make sense scientifically. And people are asking questions. Who's this guy that's healing the blind man? Who's this guy that's healing that person? He has to be a prophet, right? Like Elijah. Elijah did some of those things. This guy must be like Elijah. Others disagreed. They said, no. He can't be Elijah. He has to be a demon. He's here to trick us. That's who this guy is. Others thought differently. They said, Well, maybe he's just John the Baptist who shaved, got off his diet of locusts and honey, and he's back. He's starting to live like a normal guy now. Who is this guy? That's what Mark is focused on. And these questions continue to get asked until one day Jesus turns to his disciples, those who were closest to him, and asks them, who do you say that I am? Peter, who always seemed to be the guy to speak up in these scenarios, spoke up and he said, you are the Messiah. I imagine a hush falling over the disciples as they were walking. Not a noise except for the sandals on the sand crunching. The momentous confession of Peter lingers in the air. You, Jesus, are the Messiah. Jesus tells them not to tell anyone, but the tone of the entire story of Mark, the tone of the gospel begins to shift. Jesus' identity is now out for the disciples to see. Jesus' identity is made clear to the disciples. The story shifts. The question is no longer, who is this person? But the question is, how is this Messiah, this Jesus figure, going to overthrow the Roman Empire and take back the land that was rightfully that of Israel? This is lost on us in modern times. We hear Messiah, and what do we immediately think of? Jesus. But that's not the case. When they thought Messiah, they thought freedom from the oppression of Rome. It's important to put ourselves in their shoes, because almost immediately this question of how the Messiah was going to save Israel comes up as Jesus foretells his death and resurrection. We read on in Mark 8, verses 31 to 33. It reads, "Then he, Jesus, began to teach them that the Son of Man must undergo great suffering and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the scribes, and be killed, and after 3 days rise again. He said all this quite openly, and Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. But turning and looking at his disciples, he rebuked Peter and said, 'Get behind me, Satan, for you are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human beings.'" First of all, yikes, Peter. You really need to learn how to think before you speak. I mean, you just called this man Messiah not 5 verses prior, and here you are challenging him, saying he's wrong. What are you doing, Peter? But second of all, the disciples got the whole thing wrong. You see, they were thinking of it in human terms. They were thinking of human Messiah, who would go triumphantly into Rome with an army and a miraculous wizard-esque combat style, who's going to be throwing miracles here and there at the Romans to free them from their oppression. They were thinking freedom by the sword. Jesus was thinking freedom by the cross. We read on, and Jesus predicts his death a second time, and then a third time. Everything is pointing towards this Messiah saving Israel. Elijah and Moses appear to Jesus and 3 of his disciples, fulfilling Old Testament prophecy about this Messiah. Jesus begins talking about this kingdom of God and how hard it is for the rich to enter it. And the disciples are thinking, yes, yes, a kingdom full of Israelites who have been oppressed, and these rich Romans aren't allowed in. The disciples again and again misunderstood the plan of God as they asked. They said, "I want to sit at your right hand. I want to sit at your left hand. Who will be greater?" And Jesus says, "You have it all wrong. Everything is pointing towards Jesus and Messiah. Everything's happening in Jerusalem. They're going there right now." And then the momentum of the story pauses. It stops for just a brief moment. And it's here that we find the story of Bartimaeus. Barty. Blind Bart. The story that Jeremiah read for us at the beginning. Let's slow down along with the story of Mark and look at this, verse by verse. Verse 46 says, "They came to Jericho. As he and his disciples and a large crowd were leaving Jericho, Bartimaeus, son of Timaeus, a blind beggar, was sitting by the roadside." What's interesting about this verse is the geography of where it's happening. Some of you might be into geography. I'm not, so I had to look this up, and I have a helpful map to help those of us who don't know where things are. But we know from context of this passage that Jesus and his disciples are heading in the direction of Jerusalem. In fact, they started past here, up here somewhere along the Jordan River in the Sea of Galilee. They were around the Sea of Galilee, and they'd been traveling down the Jordan River, and they get to Jericho. And their main goal is Jerusalem over here. And so they're going to turn and go to Jerusalem. That's where the story is, okay? Just wanted to make sure we're all there. We could see that they're going to Jerusalem. This is important because in light of our story, remember that everything is pointing towards Jerusalem. Everything about the Messiah is aiming us towards Jerusalem. Many people would have been thinking that this is the time where Jesus was finally going to make his move in Jerusalem. He was finally going to overthrow the Romans. Crowds had gathered. This was his triumphant moment, and people didn't want to miss it. They wanted to see it, and very likely, they wanted to participate in this overthrowing of the Romans. As such, a large crowd gathers with Jesus. It's probably a slightly rowdy crowd. It may have looked like at a football game after the home team wins and everyone in the stadium is just buzzing with energy. So happy that their team is finally winning after years of loss. And while the crowd at the football game may be focused on heaping insults and jeers towards the visiting fans that had the unfortunate idea to go to the stadium that evening, Jesus' crowd had a much more ambitious goal. They were heading to Jerusalem. Nothing could get in their way. Nothing. Well, except for good old blind Bart, of course. We read on in verses 47 and 48. When he, Bart, heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout out and say, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." Many sternly ordered him to be quiet, but he cried out even more loudly, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. Son of David." Bart's a psycho. What is he doing? Here's this crowd that's coming toward him. He can't hear him, but he can certainly see him. The crowd is moving and passing by him, and someone probably lets a comment that he overhears like, "Oh, man, Jesus of Nazareth, who would have thought this guy would be leading the Messiah revolution?" I don't know exactly how, but somehow Bart finds out that this is Jesus, and he starts yelling, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. Son of David, have mercy." The crowd, not impressed with old Bartimaeus. "Sorry, bud, we're on our way to Jerusalem. Don't have time for you. Keep it moving." But Bart, he's different. He's either crazy or courageous, and probably a bit of both, because he keeps going. Even louder, the Bible tells us, "Son of David, have mercy on me. Son of David, have mercy." It's like if the crowd at the football game was jeering on the visiting team and one of the visiting teams starts insulting the home team back. That guy's getting beaten up. It's completely against the grain. It's completely against the flow of things to do what Bart did. Jesus gets word of this man and is faced with a choice. Keep on going to Jerusalem, or stop and deal with this one man. He has this entire crowd ready to go to Jerusalem. He has everything he needs. He could overthrow the Roman Empire. He could leave Bart on the side of the road, and no one would care. But what does he do? He turns to the crowd, and in a profound act of countercultural love, he says, "Call him here. Call him here. Bart, come here." To even acknowledge a blind beggar sitting on the side of the road is a profound act of love. Think about when the last time someone had even acknowledged Bart. When was the last time someone had noticed him? Perhaps never. But yet, Jesus did. Jesus called to Bart. We read that Bart, he had no hesitancy. He knew what he came for. He threw off his cloak. He sprang up and he went to Jesus. He was ready. And so was Jesus. Jesus doesn't end the love there. He takes it a step further. In verse 51, we read, Jesus said to him, "What do you want me to do for you?" The blind man said to him, "My teacher, let me see again." Jesus said to him, "Go, your faith has made you well." Immediately, he regained his sight and followed him on the way. Jesus, on his way to Jerusalem, he's on his way to act out his pre-established role as Messiah, stops and heals, and he cares for, and he loves this one man. I don't know about you, but this gives me great hope. If Jesus, at the height of his ministry, at the height of his fame, crowds pointing and following him, and everything is pointing to the future, and everything is pointing to Jerusalem, and everything is pointing towards his enactment as Messiah. If he can stop and heal this one beggar on the side of the road, then what can he do for me? If Jesus can stop all this future momentum of the story of Mark and care for this one person, what can he do for you right now, today? You might want to start by saying, yes, yes, God can do amazing things for me this week while I'm at work. No, no. What can he do for you today? Yes, when my kids are moved out and when things are going great, what can, no. Today, right now, what can God do for you now? God cares about you in the present. I'm not saying he doesn't care about your future, because he does. But why should we worry about the future when the Creator God is right there in front of us? He's walking with the crowds. He cares for us. All we have to do is stop and cry out to him. He doesn't care about whether we feel like we are worth being saved. He's going to save us regardless. He doesn't care if our lives are a mess. He's going to be with us every step of the way. He doesn't care about our physical appearance. We are made in the image of him. He just wants to care for you. He just wants to love you, just like he loved blind Bart. At the very end of this passage, we find out this is not just a one-time thing for good old Bart, but that in reality, this was a life-changing experience where the present time dramatically altered Bart's future. You see, Bart didn't just sit and receive the healing and go back and sit on the side of the road, but rather he picked up his things and he followed Jesus on the way. You know, we're using the NRSV translation this morning. One of the reasons I chose that is because it says that he followed him on the way, because following Jesus is much more than just following him down a road. It's about a way of life. It's about picking up your cross and carrying it. And I think Bart did that. Bart understood that Jesus was there as Messiah, not just to overthrow Rome, but to change lives. As we end here, I want to ask you three questions about how you might take your next step in following Jesus along the way. How we might follow in Bart's example and go along this journey with Jesus. These are questions that you can write down, take a picture of the slide, think about it, perhaps even talk to your friends about it. Have a conversation. The first question is this: what barriers are preventing you from crying out to Jesus? In other words, what is preventing you from crying out to God and having a relationship with him? You see, maybe this isn't you. Maybe you have been faithfully crying out to God for longer than I've even been alive. And I know there are people here this week that have done that they've been faithful in their cries out to God. But I also know that there are people here that have yet to take that step, that have yet to fully cry out to God and say, "God, I need you." And if that's you, if you're just on the edge, what's stopping you? Are you worried that people will think weird of you if you suddenly start to follow Jesus along this pathway? Do you have unanswered questions about this whole Jesus thing that are preventing you from fully diving in? Have you previously cried out to Jesus and have been hurt by it? I encourage you, if this is you, take your next step of faith. Whether it's in baptism like Sarah did this morning, or if it's just about having a conversation with someone, find your next step. Don't let this barrier prevent you from crying out to Jesus. Don't let whatever it is prevent you from experiencing Jesus' work that he can do in your life. The next question is, what barriers are preventing you from receiving his love? This might be a bit of a bold question if you just read it like that, but another way to rephrase it might be, what parts of your life are you not letting Jesus love? Because he wants to. But what parts of your life have you not let him into? It's like, well, sometimes I'll like the way that my girlfriend's hair looks like. And I'll say, man, I really like your hair. It's just beautiful. And I don't, some days she must just be having a bad day or something, because immediately she says, no, it doesn't. It's not beautiful. And I'm like, what? No, it's beautiful. I like the curls and whatever you do. And she says, no, it's not beautiful. Yes, it is. No, it's not. Yes, it is. Do you see? I just want to love the girlfriend's hair. But she's not letting me. In the same way, I think Jesus wants to love all of you. And he does love all of you. But what are the parts of you that he's not letting, or that you're not letting him love? Maybe it's your hair. Or maybe it's your laugh. Or the way that you can't seem to get your marriage exactly the way you want it. Or your addiction. How could Jesus ever love you if he knew about that? Or your finances, you've been wasteful with them for far too long. How could Jesus ever love you there? And so you block off these areas. You block off these things, and you don't want to let Jesus in. We all have these moments. We don't want to see Jesus in that area. But in these moments, how can we let Jesus in? How can we let his love illuminate the darkest parts of our life? How can his love seep in, even to where our heart is the very hardest, and soften it? How can we do that? I'll let you think on that as we move to the third question, which is, how is Jesus showing his love right now? How is Jesus showing love in the things, in the circumstances of your life right now? And an additional addendum to this question would be, how does Jesus' love move you into action? In other words, how is Jesus' love that he is showing you right now, how do you allow that to move you? When Bartimaeus received the love of Christ, he moved into action. He gave up his whole life to follow Jesus. When he received the love of Christ, he went and followed him on the way. In your life, right now, in the present, at this very moment, how can you receive the love of Christ, but then also go and show that very same love to the world around us? How can you be the one to give others a glimpse of what it feels like to have Jesus impact your life? How can we follow in Jesus' example where he was not a Messiah to overthrow Rome, but he was the Messiah to come on the cross and hang there and die for each and every one of us. How can we follow in the example of Jesus' self-sacrificial love in the world around us? How can we learn from Bartimaeus as we do this?